Welcome to Backstories. This week I'm joined by none other than Mr. Chicago himself, Mr. Kurt Elster. How are you, Kurt?
I'm well and honored to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you. Thank you for finding the time. So as I was explaining to you before I hit record, Backstories is really an interview series chatting with interesting people from the web, world of the web, design, technology, and creative industries, which I'm hoping you fit into.
I think I do. I'm sure I do.
That's good. That's very good. So our paths crossed as a result of Shopify, and we had the pleasure of meeting in person at Unite in San Francisco earlier this year. You were sporting a rather spectacular camouflage blazer, as I recall.
Yes, I was peacocking, which makes it it's very easy to find me. And even with people I didn't meet but I knew was there, I was the guy in the camo blazer. And it's like 50-50. They'll be like, oh, I did see you.
Oh, yeah, they saw the blazer. And I'll be honest, we've only ever chatted on Skype before. And for some reason, you're not as tall on Skype as you are in person. I was like, you know, I was like, he's a tall one. He's a tall one. But so, yeah, you're based in Chicago, in the center of Chicago, in the office. Is that right?
Yeah, we're 10 minutes outside O'Hare, Park Ridge, Illinois. Tiny. It's a suburb. That's where my office is. Beautiful view of Northwest Highway from my window.
Very good. And you're one of the founders of EtherCycle?
Yes. Yeah, I co-founded a small boutique agency that went from started as 2009 started as a software as a service business into a WordPress development shop for creative agencies, which got me some cool gigs like Verizon, the NFL, Hilton Hotels, and then completely did a 180 and said, hey, we should just help. Like, we should just do e-commerce, and then with it, because it's very rewarding, I'd love that we can quantify our work with e-commerce. And then from that, so wait, why are we messing with these annoying platforms? We should just do Shopify. And that was about 2 years ago now, and that was easily the best decision I ever made, niching down into just that platform.
I have a question on exactly that thing shortly, but I'd like to go back a little bit before we get to that point. Because I know one of the things that you're very interested in is business development, marketing, automation, those kind of things. So let's go back before you started with the agency and the WordPress stuff. Do you have a background in design or web? Are you kind of a web native, or were you more on the business side at that point when you started out?
So the short answer is both. I did. I got a degree in business. Went to business school and also have a certificate in integrated marketing, which was this fancy term that kind of went nowhere, that just meant an agency that also did web stuff.
I love that.
Yeah, they like had a whole field of study, I think, that was short-lived called integrated marketing. So I did have, like, my education was quite literally in business, and then I was totally overeducated. And I struggled to find a job. And I finally found a job with a e-commerce dropshipper that did auto parts that was local to the area. And I just happened to be the most tech-savvy person at the office. So I kept getting more and more of these tech gigs. And then finally, like through, you know, for other reasons, I was wildly unhappy, knew I needed to start my own business, and quit my job with my sole plan was, I'm going to start my own business. Like, I literally had not thought past that. And then I put in my 1 week notice. That's how desperate I was to leave. And then like 48 hours later in the shower, I'm like, I'm going to build my own e-commerce platform. Well, naturally that was biting off way more than I could chew. So to keep the lights on while we were struggling with that, local business owners were saying, hey, they totally misunderstood what we were doing. They said, can you help us with our website? And I had been turning them away. Instead of saying, yes, let me take your green money for a thing I could readily do, I was turning them away to work on this boondoggle SaaS project. And finally I said, well, maybe we should try that. And I was like, wait a second, we're actually good at this. You know, I only knew Photoshop because I was really into photography. And I just started.
Okay.
Yeah. And so I'd learned Photoshop and I started designing websites. And my business partner knew how to cut and code them. So it just worked. And we never occurred to us because it felt easy. And this is a mistake a lot of entrepreneurs make. Because it felt easy, we're like, well, you can't sell that. No, easy just means you're good at it or you enjoy it or both.
Mm. So when you quit the auto parts dropshipping business, it sounds like you didn't really have a plan other than the desire to kind of be the master of your own destiny.
Yes.
How far away from the plan that you may have mustered up after that have you deviated? In other words, the business that you're running now, does it resemble anything to the idea that you had at that time?
I have the same office and the same name. And sometimes okay. people be like, what is EtherCycle? And it's like, it seems like a stupid name now. I like having a made up name because you know, I can register it anywhere. It always works. It's like a unique brand, but it doesn't mean anything. So that's the same. But other than that, like we started with, let's build a software as a service business for specifically for bike shops. That was an e-commerce platform where it already had the inventory built in as part of the database, because data entry is a big pain, especially when you're trying to run a local store. So I said, we'll just add, you know, we'll get these feeds from distributors and manufacturers, and then you just check the lines you carry and it populates them. And that, at the time, it was a struggle to get the industry to work like with that new idea. And now there's several services that do this. Mm. So we went from that to like WordPress for creative agencies, which I think is quite a bit different, and then now back to e-commerce. And there's at least one. Our first Shopify store was a custom theme we built for a local bike shop. So I don't know how close it resembles that original business.
No, I find it fascinating the kind of routes that businesses take. So outside of EtherCycle, you've literally pretty much only ever had one quote unquote proper job. You've pretty much done your own thing since
university. Yeah, and even like starting in college, my first entrepreneurial endeavor was I had $20 and I started designing my own t-shirts, printing iron-ons, and then selling them on eBay.
Wow. Yeah. It's amazing how many people I speak to have t-shirts businesses in their background.
It's funny. Like I derisively will say, oh, you know, everybody's first business is it's either handmade jewelry or a t-shirt business. And it's usually like a gender split. You know, if it's a woman, it's like, oh, I make my own jewelry. And if it's a guy, I design my own t-shirts. And like when I look back on it, I did the same thing. I was no different.
But I think you learn so much through that, especially when it comes to e-commerce, because you learn production, you learn marketing, you learn sales, you learn distribution. You kind of learn the pain points. And surely that must come into play with what you do now, because reading a lot of your blogs and a lot of your the things that you do with helping merchants directly as opposed to setting up the stores, all of that experience must come into play and is a very marketable asset.
No, absolutely. Yeah. No, I think – and then, you know, even working having my only proper job was an e-commerce store, and it was a small team, and it was a drop shipper. So it was, and we were doing multiple channels on eBay and Amazon. So yeah, I had a very directly relatable experience, and I was glad as much as I struggled with that job at the time, I was very glad to have that like one-on-one direct, that insider industry experience. I think it would be tough and disingenuous for me to say, yeah, let me help you with your e-commerce store if I had never worked in one or ran one.
No, I totally agree. In terms of education and like business, your business education, how valuable do you think that is? I ask because I think over here in the UK at least, people want to get into the web industry. They want to get into kind of online marketing. And there are some courses and, you know, lucky to know a few people in that sector who are doing very, very creative things. But in terms of higher education here, what we call university, you often refer to as college, the web courses seem to be very much behind the curve. And I think a lot of people who want to get into the industry we both work in, it's a big decision. You know, do you go to university and jump through that hoop and at least get a qualification? Or do you go and you think, well, I can kind of do my own thing whilst I'm there and I can learn all the ropes about the web and design and code and marketing and stuff like that, get the degree as well, or just should I go and intern and make my own path? I mean, is there a similar situation in the US?
Absolutely. And people ask me, I do get this question fairly often because I have a master's, and people say, well, was that valuable? The short answer, while I would never regret my education, I don't think it was necessary or directly applicable. I think, you know, anytime you do a university course, it's probably always going to be out of date. I mean, it's always going to be at least a year behind where the industry is now. And when you look at the industry, like 2 years feels like a lifetime. It's very fast paced. It moves very quickly. Just in terms of like what marketing works right now and also technology, like, oh, okay, we're doing responsive now, you know, that sort of thing. So no, I, I think the most valuable teacher is experience. Getting a job somewhere and learning it from someone, doing an internship, I think, you know, that's hugely valuable. I learned so much in the 1 year's time I worked in an e-commerce business, and then applied that to my own businesses and then to helping others. And then secondarily, implementing it for yourself, you know, I think is helpful. So I have, I've written a couple books, and then just like how I market those is the experience I use to then, when I help other people market their stuff.
That's interesting. Internships over here are silly as it sounds, relatively new. There are a number of agencies in the web sector over here who are offering paid internships, but they seem to be a huge part of the culture, the working culture in the US where you're based. Do you offer internships at EtherCycle? Is that something you've considered?
Yeah, in the past, you know, it was funny. People, when we were, when we had more of like a generalist agency view, I would get unsolicited applications all the time. And if someone ever sends me a thoughtful email, I always write a thoughtful response. And I did have someone who said, hey, I would made the case for, this is why you should hire me as an intern. So sure enough, I did. One summer we had an intern, and he went on to work for a successful startup in San Francisco.
Wow.
But
I know. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. Go on.
So in the US, if it's a unpaid internship, the rule is having the intern should hinder the business more than it helps if they're unpaid. Because people we got into a problem, especially agencies would do this, where they would really just use interns as like free labor. And so I treated it like when we had an intern, I gave him mock assignments that were like similar to what we were working on, but it was like, okay, here's your own thing. And then in doing that, he was able to, in 90 days, build up a very, pan out his portfolio.
Oh, that's really interesting. Yeah, I think it's something that will definitely start to feature more, certainly on this side of the pond, as we say. But I think it's still in early days for a lot of the sort of creative industries over here, at least. So it's interesting that I think you guys are just more ahead of the game. It's more part of the culture. So I would argue that you've done pretty well through specialization. It just so happens that the company in question that you specialize is one that I happen to work for also. But that's not what we're here to talk about.
You are definitely biased. but
very much biased. But you talk a lot in your courses and your, you know, for want of a better phrase, side projects that you've done, your books and your kind of mentorship and things like that around what I say niching, which I believe you call niching, but yes. We should not talk about that. How much of a decision is that for an agency that may have had a more broader outlook, and how scary was that? I mean, we talk about it a lot, you know, specialize, it's the way forward. You've got to have your, you know, your USP. But how, I mean, you know, it's probably pretty scary to jettison paying gigs that are keeping the lights on or maybe more, and then go down a single path.
I think having a clear positioning statement, having a clear narrow focus, a laser focus to the ideal project, ideal client that you want to work with, and advertising that, holding that up as the first thing for everyone to see, is the only way to run a successful business. It's counterintuitive because you think, well, if I've got this narrow focus, I'm turning away tons of work. No, what you're doing is making it easy to occupy space in someone's brain as you're the expert. So, you know, when I said the day we switched it and I just said, okay, we're just doing Shopify only projects. And then later I even like niched down further within that. But initially I just said, we just work on Shopify. Within 60 days, it was so clear to people that I was, you know, the quote unquote, the Shopify guy. I was within 60 days of that, I was getting referrals from people I'd never met.
Wow.
And I think that like that illustrates the power of positioning, but it's counterintuitive. You know, I understand why it's scary, but you don't, you know, it's easy when you're starting out. Actually, it's hard when you're starting out because you don't know how you should position. So it's important to note, you know, your positioning statement's not set in stone. Your positioning, it's not set in stone, and you're going to revise it. I have been through dozens of iterations on it. So the positioning statement I use is, you know, right now it'd be, Kurt Elster helps Shopify store owners uncover hidden profits in their websites. unlike other Shopify experts, Kurt is solely interested in getting the highest possible ROI for his clients. So it's, I mean, the formula there is I help X do Y to achieve Z, and then unlike others, comma, differentiating statement. It's kind of the formula there. If you can answer that, it's like a much faster elevator pitch.
It's interesting that you said after 60 days you're getting referrals from people you'd never met. How do you think that came about? Did you have a concerted marketing effort once you'd made that decision? Did the branding change? Did you go out and start speaking at meetups? Did you approach people? How did that 60 days, obviously that 60 days had a huge impact on your business, but what proactive steps did you take to achieve that?
So I had a newsletter with less than 500 people on it. I think if you have, I mean, a newsletter with 100 people is great. I think if you tell 100 people a secret, everyone's going to know your secret, right? But when you, like, if you phrase it like that, like, what's your darkest secret? Tell 100 people. No one would think to do that. But if I say, all right, you're running a business, you change your positioning, tell 100 people, a lot of people are very dismissive, like, oh, that wouldn't work. Well, I had less than 500. I mean, there are only a couple hundred people on this email list. So I started sending emails out. That helped. And then to get people on the email list, I had a free email course, and that's sort of what started me with the power of marketing automation. So that was my lead magnet, was just, hey, I've got this free email course. And that was really, I had just pieced together like what I knew and plus like some past blog posts and stuff. And then I started getting on, started hitting the podcast circuit. And I think, you know, what's wonderful about podcasts, all of them, is it's a very intimate format. So for 20 minutes, people have to have you in their ears. And what's interesting now is a majority of, I would say, you know, at least half of the people who I talk to as prospects on the phone, have heard me on my podcast or as a guest on another podcast. And halfway through the call, they'll say something like, you know, I feel like I know you. Well, it's because, you know, I'm at a disadvantage. You have listened to me. And I'm, you know, here, you know, on this podcast and on any podcast, I'm, you know, I'm just myself. There's like a little less swearing than me in real life. And that's about the only difference. So I think that helped as well.
It's quite funny. I, a few years ago, did a lot of small, short tutorial videos for Shopify, and they are still, I believe, in the docs. And occasionally you'll meet someone and you'll be halfway through a conversation, especially in the US, and they kind of look at you funny and you're like, oh God, you know, what's the matter? And they go, how do I know your voice?
Yeah.
And you're not quite sure if it's a good thing or not.
And especially, I think, like as an American, your voice plus your accent becomes very distinct. So yeah, like before we ever talked, I already knew your voice because I'd heard the podcast. I'd seen those screencasts, and I still see those screencasts, or yeah, They'll like pop up as suggested for you on YouTube.
Yeah, just for you, Kurt. I think you do require my screencasts, but anyways. So you talked there about a couple of things I'd like to pick up on. One is this giving away of secrets, as my friend at Shopify, Harley, calls it, kind of opening the kimono on how things work. And I think you've done a lot of that. Not only have you done courses, as you said, one of the things that started you off there with that email list, you do the unofficial Shopify podcast where you talk with people who are also working in the industry about how merchants, I guess the end listener, the end user in that respect, can, you know, really ramp up their stores. But you also do things like, you know, mentorship, and you've worked with us, Shopify, on Skillshare courses, sort of, again, giving away a lot of your secrets. Why do you think that's a good business tactic?
I absolutely. So again, this is another one of those counterintuitive approaches where you say, all right, well, the best advertising, I think, is showing people what you do. Well, no one wants to hear me talk about me all day. You know, when I see that.
Apart from yourself, Kurt.
Apart from myself, yes. I like my own voice. I call it, when I see that in like sales letters or in cold outreach emails, I call that I-area, where they just like, it's I. I don't care about I care about, you know, me. You should be writing you. So the way to flip that, to tell people all about yourself and how great you are at what you do, is to teach them how to do it. And that demonstrates so many things, like, oh, this person is helpful. You know, they're generally interested in seeing me succeed. And they are clearly an expert if they could teach the subject matter. But no one, you know, and some people are going to take that stuff and go use it. good. I want them to, because they're still going to remember, like, I'm the one who taught them how to do it. So as they have other questions down the road, they may come to me, and that could turn into work, that could turn into referrals, but it's cemented in their brain. But most people are going to see it and go, you know, I could do this myself based on this guide, or I could just hire this guy to do it.
That's interesting. Do you, in my notes here, I was like, was going to ask, you know, how successful is it? You know, is it quantifiable? The courses, the mentorship, you know, the sort of speaking on podcasts, obviously it's time and money on your side, but do you see that as kind of your marketing spend in a way?
No, absolutely. Yeah. The time I put into it, I don't think I have ever said no to guesting on a podcast. You know, they're evergreen. It creates this incredible, I get backlinks from it. So it's SEO value, it generates traffic. But it's this wonderful personal medium. So like guest blog posts, never say no to. Giving a quote, I never say no to. Podcasts, never say no to. And that really is my marketing strategy. And, you know, beyond that, the only paid thing I do is Facebook remarketing. So if someone visits my websites, visits any one of them, and I like, you know, to keep things very niche, I have a whole bunch of satellite websites, then they'll see remarketing ads for my services, for my lead magnet, to try and get them into that ladder.
So you mentioned there that you have quite a few websites out there. Do you think people come to Kurt and want Kurt, or do they come to EtherCycle? And is coming to Kurt going to be a problem as your company grows?
So, good question. As the company has grown, you know, originally I was doing design and marketing and project management and business development. And now as I grow, I only want to do business development. So I've been lucky enough to find, you know, really talented people who are great to work with, and move and delegate those tasks away. What was funny is, you know, when we were at Shopify Unite, Alex from We Make Websites told me, I feel like his company is, you know, a year ahead of mine in growth. And I said, you know, what did you do to help enable that? He goes, well, I started doing less. I said, what do you mean? He goes, if I walked in, and he has a wonderful English accent that I don't.
Please try it. Please try it.
No, I can't do it. Now I'm embarrassed. He said, if I have to log into a Shopify store, I failed. So that was, you know, he's in charge, you know, at his company, We Make Websites. He's doing biz dev. So for it's a failure on his part to have logged into a Shopify store. And that's kind of that's a good way, you know, for me to look at, to learn and identify delegating. But no, actually, it was everything was we and the EtherCycle team. And that made it hard to sell, because when people got on the phone, they're like, well, who is this guy? Versus when I changed it to, you know, the sales letter stuff will always be from Kurt. And I always say, you know, because I'm doing the biz dev, I say, you're going to work directly with me. And that actually made it much easier. That made people more comfortable, because they are, you know, they're no longer at a disadvantage. They're not getting on the phone with some sales guy. They're getting on the phone with Kurt, the trusted expert.
If you went back in time, would you reposition the brand as Kurt, or are you quite happy? Do you think there's benefits to having that umbrella company name?
I would still have an umbrella company name. I just would have, you know, kept myself out front from the beginning.
Mm.
I think having, you know, it's because people will ask, like, even now people will say, oh, do you work with a team? And then their concern is that I outsource, as though that's some bad thing. So I would say, yeah, no, I work with a team, a small team. I've got three people who will work on the project with me. You know, all of them in the U.S. and one of them whose desk is across from mine, to sort of preempt that question. And it's kind of awkward. I don't think people like asking it.
Yeah. In terms of, you mentioned earlier, you do a lot of guest posts and guest, podcasts and things like that. Has there been, an article or a podcast that has just kind of, I get flabbergasted you in terms of the response or the referrals? Maybe it was something that you'd kind of, I don't know, an obscure quote on a website and suddenly it generated a lot of traffic. Because I find with marketing, sometimes the things that you think are going to go swimmingly and going to get your picture on the wall just bomb. And then the things that are most left field end up giving you the craziest results.
Oh, no, that's absolutely true. I've learned that I am totally incapable of predicting what is and isn't going to work. So and stuff like completely off the wall can be huge. The first podcast I ever went on was the Web Agency podcast. I was terrified. I recorded on a Sunday. I was sweating and I got a little drunk ahead of time. That was the first podcast I was on. That was probably 2 years ago now. No, that would actually be over 2 years ago now, 2.5, maybe 3. I was talking to a coaching student yesterday who revealed to me that he heard that podcast and had started a mastermind group based on that. And one of the first things he said his goal was, I want to be like Kurt.
Oh, lovely.
So, you know, that like who would have known, you know, that would have that years long effect. Like I hear about blogs and posts and quotes I put out years prior. And what's nice about them, they lead to more of the same. Like once I got on one podcast, then suddenly I got an invite to two more and then two more. And it just kind of goes down the road like that, or giving quotes. And then I've also enabled it on my own site. Like I've set the expectation that that's what I do. So I have a tab on my personal website, kurtelster.com, for press info. Well, okay, clearly if this guy has a press info page, he must be in the press all the time. I was only in the press a little bit before I set up that page, and then it enabled more.
That's interesting. In terms, just a couple more questions on this. I think this is fascinating. So we may go over my allotted 30 minutes. So forgive me, but
please do.
In terms of the, again, for want of a better phrase, these things that you've done, I guess, outside of the main focus of the business, your courses, your mentorship, retainers and things like, retainers to help businesses succeed and that kind of stuff. How important are those to a growing business? I mean, they're obviously branded as you, and do you find that they've ever taken you away from the true focus, or are they just having all these different avenues, drip feeds revenue and just builds a more successful business?
But I think the number one thing to be happy in life and successful, I learned this from my a therapist, which I did 6 months of therapy, was hugely helpful. I learned mindfulness. I mean, you really need to be intentional with what you do with your time. So, you know, if one of those, it's an interesting question. If let's say my coaching business suddenly started chewing up too much time, well, then I would have to make a choice. I'd say, well, A, should I be just focusing only on the coaching business, you know, and make that business, you know, grow that business, or should I just limit the number of slots available? Well, you know, I get great satisfaction. I think it's very rewarding to do the coaching business, but I do limit it to, I would never do more than, 4 students a month. I have 3 students, 3 direct students right now. And then I have a group coaching, that I do as well.
Interesting. So finally, before I give you my quick fire 5, automation, something that you talk about and write about a lot. Just how much of your business can you automate successfully? What's the magic number?
probably 20%.
20%.
That's 20%. So you want to look at this. So there's 2 things. You want to be able to, like, any menial task that you really shouldn't be doing, you can kind of like start identifying those. And the easy toy to start with is a service like If This Then That, ifttt.com. It's free. It connects to a whole bunch of services. And I think like the very first bit of automation I did was just cross-posting, where if I posted to Twitter, it would automatically post to like Facebook and LinkedIn. And you could do that stuff with If This Then That. It's free. It's really easy to use. Marketing automation used to be the scary thing. Like, you know, it was for enterprises, and so the cable company could hassle me. No, it's really just a tool to save you time. Or Zapier. Once you master If This Then That, you can move on to Zapier, which is like a more business focused. It's paid, but it works with even more stuff. And then qualifying leads. So here's the example I use. The first initial part of my sales funnel, where I would waste the most time qualifying people, I've automated the whole thing. So you visit my website, and once you visit the website, you've been cookied. You will see remarketing ads on Facebook and Google, so I'm always top of mind, because I don't know where people are in the buying cycle. And then hopefully, you know, I've got a newsletter sign up with a lead magnet. Either, you know, depending on where you are, maybe you sign up for my newsletter and you just get info about the podcast. Or if you sign up, you can get a free sample of my book e-commerce bootcamp, or you can get so I've always got like a lead magnet relevant to the thing you're on. So they sign up and then they get an email that just says, hey, let me know. And I do want to hear from people. And I hide my email address everywhere I can. So I want people to sign up for my newsletter. And then that's really the only way to get my email address. So they sign up and they get a personal email from me. And then you will get one every day for a week. And then after that, you'll get one to two times a week. And it will go on for months. Like if you sign up for my Shopify list, because I had so much content, and that way I get like tons of use out of all this content. So you'll hear from me like every day or every week for 6 months, because I don't know where you are in the buying cycle. And then let's say you're finally ready, and I mean you're seeing the remarketing ads, and then you're finally ready to say, I want to work with Kurt. Okay, go to the website, and it just there's a contact form. All you have to do, it says put in your name and email address. I don't ask for anything more than that. And I will send you an email immediately with info on how to get started. So it then sends you a little explainer email that's like, hey, we're not like a lot of other agencies. Our focus is chiefly on helping you succeed. But to do that, I need you to fill out this application form. You click the application form, and I've got the application form itself has various rules in it. So depending on what you answer, it'll add or remove questions that are necessary. And then depending on your answers, like one of the questions is literally, can you presently afford to budget me as a fixed expense in growing your business? If you say no, it will send you, I will never see the email. It will just send you an email politely declining the project, or if you say you're not the key decision maker, same deal, it will just politely decline you. So I never even have to deal with it. I never even see it. And I think that's important for you know, my psychological well-being, to not be inundated with, you know, worse than not having leads is only getting unqualified leads. That will wear you out. And then if it is someone I really want to, you know, if they pass the test, and then I'll see the application form, and then if I think I can help them and I think it would be fun to work together, then I will reply to them and say, let's book a time. And I use Text Expander, which is a wonderful app, does email snippets. So I literally just type semicolon book it, and then it fills out, it like just drops my an email in there that says, hey, thanks for sharing this with me and telling me more about your business. I would love to work with you. Let's jump on a call to explore it. And then it links to Calendly, so the person can then pick the time that's available based on rules I've set. So that way I only do my sales meetings in the morning, Monday through Thursday, just like boom, 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 knock them out, maximum of 3 a day. Pops up in my calendar, and then I get notifications on my phone. So like the majority, for someone to be sold on booking that initial 30-minute consultation with me, other than me literally typing semicolon book it, the whole process is automated. And I think that's the thing to focus on, is getting those initial leads. That's the part you want to automate.
Wow. Talk about opening the kimono. Very good. One of the questions I have is please remind us of where people can find you online, but I think the list will be very extensive. there are numerous websites, but where are the principal places people can find out more about you and your products and your company?
So number one, kurtelster.com, KURTELSTER.com. On there, first thing you'll see is a newsletter sign up. This is the least, this newsletter will email you the least. You'll just get a couple intro emails sort of talking about what I do and how I can help. Feel free to reply to any of them with questions. I'm always happy to answer a thoughtful, spelled correctly email. And and then it'll email you with my podcast, which, you know, just a lot of them I think are very valuable. So I would encourage you to check that out. Or my agency website, ethercycle.com, ethercycle. And if you want to see like that process, since I don't get any notifications about it, feel free to fill out that contact form. And then you can see like what it'll send you an email, and you can see the application form and stuff.
Brilliant. And I will put all these in the show notes for this episode anyway. So you can send me all of the links outside of this chat, and I will link you up. So I try and round off each interview with my quickfire five. Same 5 questions for everyone. You look nervous, Kurt. I hope you're not.
Here we go. Hardly. Hit me.
Question 1, inbox 0 or inbox overload?
Inbox 0. I check my email twice a day, and to force myself to do it because I don't have the discipline, I use inbox pause.
Ugh, again, everyone is a way better person when it comes to inboxes than me. What's the one app you cannot live without?
Drip. Drip is the email marketing tool I absolutely love for professional services and consultants.
Third one is drink related. Espresso, macchiato, flat white, or something else?
Oh, good question. If I walked into Starbucks right now, I would go with espresso, but if I walked into Starbucks right now, it would be a red eye.
Sorry? A what?
A red eye.
What's a red eye? I've never even... Come on, spill it.
So I brain farted. I meant to say Americano. I believe a red eye is coffee and espresso. I meant to say Americano. Because
you can't backtrack now. I'm gonna have to Google that.
I'm Googling red eye.
Well, I mean, you know, I take them all the time, but I'm never
sure. Just go to Starbucks, ask for a red eye, see what happens.
It's different over here. I'm not sure that worked. We've only just started writing names on cups, and that just doesn't work. You should see the spellings of my name. I have a coffee name for that very reason. The only problem is, when I give my coffee name, which invariably is James, I forget. And so I'm standing at the end of the counter, some irate barista is berating me for James not picking up their coffee. But anyways.
James, is this guy? Where did he go? Name? Is he in the bathroom?
The worst one I've ever had when I've spelt my own name is, that's a name? I'm like, just take my money.
Unbelievably rude. I say Kurt, and then they write down Chris. So if a coffee shows up and it says Chris, I have to like wait and see, like, is this for me or is there Chris?
Brilliant. What's the most useful piece of kit in your everyday bag?
That's a great question. The thing, so from a client, a Shopify store, my bag is just Porter. I love this bag. Check it out. But the most useful thing in it is, of course, just this cheap USB battery pack. Because if you're in an airport, your phone's about to die, that's the worst feeling. I always carry this. I've gotten so much use out of just like this cheapo battery pack.
I have one of those too, but invariably I put it in the bag with everything else and it gets turned on. So by the time I'm in an emergency using it, it's flashing red. I'm like, I just charged you. It's my own fault, user error. And what are you going to do right after we hit the red button on Skype?
I am going to write the rent check for my office. That's the first thing on my to-do list. I always keep I have a post-it note, things to do. And then I'm going to send Kier my press info.
Very good. Very good indeed. Well, it's been a real pleasure, Kurt. I knew it would be. Thank you so much for your time. I know it's very valuable. And I look forward to seeing you and your camouflage jacket in person, hopefully very soon.
Thank you. My pleasure.